Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
Thank you so much for listening. Hey, we're not going to give a long, drawn-out discussion. You know where to subscribe, okay? We need subscribers. We're going to keep delivering this podcast. And if you're listening, thank you. And if you could add a friend, we would appreciate it. But today, grab a cup of coffee, sit back, get on the Peloton, take a walk. Joni Taylor is going to put you in a mood, and it is going to be a good one. Joni Taylor is a head coach at Georgia. Her team is ranked in the top 25. She has done an outstanding job building Georgia basketball back into the top 25, and we're excited to call her a friend of the podcast and a great stakeholder in our game. Here is Joni Taylor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. Anytime I get to sit down with you, I walk away inspired and educated, so I'm looking forward to it.
I feel the same way about you. Now, first, let's get through this this whole schedule thing that you're living through. Thank you for joining us the day after the South Carolina game. I know that was a tough one, a tough bus ride back to Athens. And then this morning you got waken up by your two little girls. That's got to soften some of the blows from last night, does it, Joni?
I'm telling you, it puts everything in perspective. I flipped on the light switch and my four-year-old JC, I said, it's time to get up. And she said, Mommy, is that you? Are you really here? And so it just melts your heart. It softens anything that could be hard around your heart or in your mind. And it's a really swift reminder of what's important.
You and your husband, Darius, have a unique situation, both as coaches, both coaching at different levels and coaching in different seasons. The same sport. So it kind of balances out, right? How do you guys make it work? Because I know you get this asked a lot. Darius is an assistant coach with the Atlanta Dream. You're the head coach at Georgia.
Right. It a lot of prayer is the first thing I'll say. We lean on God a lot. And then our parents are both amazing. His parents are actually with us now from Chicago. They come. They're not down as often as my parents are. But when they do come, they stay for a huge chunk of time, Debbie. So they got here maybe right after the new year, and they'll probably stay through the SEC tournament. So they stay for a month or two at a time. And when they're not here, my parents both are with us in Georgia. So we have at all times one of our parents living with us to help with the girls and just our schedule. We live off of a Google Calendar that is just updated, you know, live. So I see everything that he has going on and vice versa. And it takes work because there are times where we are like two ships passing in the night. I mean, we text more than we sometimes have face-to-face conversations. But we just really try to stay locked in and tuned into each other as much as possible. And try to figure it out. So it's nice that in normal seasons, the family travels with me, and that's a blessing. And that's, you know, again, I tip my hat to Georgia for allowing us to do that. So it helps because your family is with you. Obviously, during this COVID year, we made the decision not to do that, just to keep everybody safe and protect our bubble. So it has been difficult not having them on the road. But it's also nice to know that when he's in his off season, he can fully support me. And when we're in our off season, we can, you know, I can fully support him. Atlanta's an easy drive. It's easy to get to. It was challenging. Obviously, he was in the bubble this summer with the WNBA. So that was different. I think we were sending him care packages like twice a week. But we just make it work. I'm super happy for him because, as you know, he walked away from South Carolina when I became the head coach. And, you know, that was a tough decision to make. And it was his decision alone. But to see him now be rewarded and get to coach, he's an incredible coach. He knows the game so well. He just is an excellent developer of talent and just, you know, people. And so I'm happy for him. And so anytime that we can, we're going to do whatever we can to make each other happy and to make it work.
Amen to that. I know I can tell you after all these years of marriage and three kids, and now my kids are a little bit older and college age and out of college and in college, you know, that thought of having a day off still hasn't really crossed my mind. There really isn't a day off, is there, Joni? I mean, not from your schedule with work, not from your family life, like, people, I'm still waiting for the day that I can go to the beach actually with a chair and a book. That hasn't happened yet.
And Karen keeps telling me, my associate head coach, Karen Lang, her two are teenagers now, and they were in elementary school when they came to Athens. She goes, it's going to get easier. Now, they're always going to want you, but there will come a time where they can put on their own clothes and fix their own food, and you can come in and take a bit of a breath. Because right now, when I get up, we help get them ready. We drive them into school. Their learning lab is literally on campus and across the street from our gym. So I'm fortunate to be able to be close to them, drive them into school most days. But when I get home at night, it's three people waiting for me. That's JC, Drew, and the dog. They hear the garage door open up. And as soon as I hit the door, they are all three standing there. One's barking and two are, mommy, mommy, mommy. And Darius is like, guys, let her put her bags down. Let her get settled. So you constantly feel that you're being pulled, and, you know, it is a good feeling, but you also sometimes are like, ooh, I'd just love to pick up a book and sit on the couch.
You know, so I experienced this, and I'm sure that you do at times. And, you know, as parents and as mothers that have careers and travel and work, you know, not to throw my husband under the bus, cause I would never do that, but it was always easy to throw some chicken nuggets on. And then when I was around, I always felt the need to cook just so that I knew they were getting some vegetables and stuff like that. I mean, is that happening with Darius? I'm not trying to kill the guy because I know he's awesome. Yep. But, you know, sometimes they get the gold star, but we never get a break.
You know, fortunately for us, one of our parents usually prepares the meal. But yes, he will, you know, throw some fries in the oven. He's a great on the grill. He can, you know, microwave some steamables. And for me, that is great. I, being from Mississippi, as you know, I'm used to, like, if it came out of a can, it doesn't count. Like, that's kind of how I was raised. That's how my mom and dad both right. cook. Like, everything is fresh cut. And early on, I got over this with JC, because a lot of my friends who had young kids, they were like, yeah, I puree their food and I do this and I do that. And so I had all these thoughts of what that was going to look like. And as soon as I stopped breastfeeding and she got to the point where she could eat real food, I was like, yeah, no, that's not happening. Gerber, whatever we're going to get, like, that's going to work. They're going to be fine. Like, they're smart. They're thriving, you know? And so I have to fight the urge to want to come home and be this perfect mom in terms of getting something cooked on the stove. Now, if I have time to do that on a Sunday before I go to practice, I'll do that. Now that we're in season, that's out of the window. But I fought with that the first 6-7 months, and now I'm just completely over it.
You and I have been around the game a long time, and you've been around the SEC in many different capacities. And I remember a time when family wasn't allowed to travel, that there were a lot of times where athletic departments just didn't either budget for it or didn't see that it was an important priority for the head coach. Now, how do you see it now, you know, with the resources? Like you said, Georgia has allowed you to travel with your family under normal circumstances.
I look at our situation. I look at Nikki Fargus at LSU, and when she comes here to Athens, Justice is right there with her. You know, I look at a lot of coaches last year at the SEC tournament. We're passing by Kentucky, they're coming off the floor for a practice and we're going on the floor. And Jackson is right there with Kyra, and she's an associate head coach at that time, not even the head coach, and her family's traveling. I think we've come a long way. I think back to when I was a player, and to my knowledge, Pat Summitt was the only head coach who I even knew had a son, Tyler. You know, I'm sure there were more, but Tyler was visible. The other, you know, kids of coaches weren't female, you know, that I would say. And so what I learned from my coach, Rick Moody, even though Ben did not travel with us, Ben was always around. If it was the weekend, Ben came to practice. Ben's birthday was in June. And so during camp, we stopped to celebrate Ben's birthday. So I learned, you know, from him how to share those special moments, because you're just pulled away so much. But we've come a long way in terms of seeing families with parents. And that's a tribute to the SEC, to our institutions, to understand the value we have. And I think it's important because women need to be in college basketball. Women need to be in basketball at every level, NBA, college, men, women. And in order for that to happen, there's got to be some flexibility in terms of our family feeling like, and seeing a picture of I can do this because I can bring my family with me. When I was a young assistant, I don't know how many conversations I would have with other assistants, really good assistants, female, on the road. And they were just worried about, there's going to come a time when I get married that I don't know if I can do both. And they left the business because of it. And we lost a lot of young, really good assistant coaches because instead of waiting to see what would happen, they made the decision to just do something different because they did not see a vision of it being possible to balance both.
I 100% agree, because I remember coming up when I didn't see any women that had children that took them on the road or even had children at all, because the time and the responsibility of trying to raise kids and raise your team, basically, because that's what you're doing with 18 to 22 year old young women. You're raising them. Joni, you and I also share another commonality. We are on the Collegiate Coaching Diversity Pledge Alliance Committee. For lack of a better way of saying that, we are responsible for making sure that we help athletic directors see the need and the importance in balancing and hiring practices with diversity and inclusion. That's a responsibility that I know you and I take very seriously. And I know for me, for decades, I've been trying to help athletic directors place coaches or find coaches in just my little way of doing it, you know, on the side. When you were approached about the opportunity to share some responsibility in this pledge, if you will, which is actually a pledge that athletic directors sign committing that they will make sure it's not just, yeah, I'm just going to interview somebody over here because they check off the boxes for race, diversity, inclusion, all that. But this is actually a responsibility to make sure you carry it through and carry it through to a high degree. What's your feeling on being asked to be a part of that?
Honored, humbled. When I got approached and saw who was already on the committee and on the board, I was like, good Lord, why do they need me? They've got it figured out. But obviously said yes. I think it is about bringing awareness. I say all the time, there's two things that are happening. One thing is you hire who you know. And if you don't know anyone outside of your circle, then it looks the same. Or you hire who has been recommended to you by someone in your circle. So again, if your circle all looks the same, those are the recommendations that you get. So in some ways, it's bringing awareness. And in some cases, it is intentional. And so it's about bringing awareness to helping out accountability, you know, because part of this pledge is being open about, obviously protecting the confidentiality of who interviewed, but being open about showing the steps that you took in order to try to create a diverse and inclusive environment. And that doesn't mean that you end up hiring a minority, but it means that you were very thorough and intentional. And it wasn't, like you said, a check the box, I'm going to pull in this candidate just so I can say that I interviewed a minority, whether that's a female, black female, brown female, you know, whatever that looks like. So I'm extremely honored. I'm proud to be a part of it. And I think the biggest thing is just continuing to push and to also, what is the right way to say, to correct the assumptions that are made in terms of, from a legal standpoint, this is not good for our university, so we don't want to do it. Or we already have checks and balances here. If we had the right checks and balances, Debbie, then we wouldn't need the diversity pledge that we have. And so it's also about helping to dispel those rumors of, well, from an ethics standpoint or from a HIPAA standpoint, there's no way this would fly. So I was, you know, advised not to do it. And so it's being knowledgeable about what actually the pledge does, so that you can help counteract those remarks when they come from athletic directors or SWAs for that matter.
I know you're a big relationship builder, and I know you're big on networking. And I know from our time together as friends, colleagues, somewhat peers, I mean, I'm older than you, but, and I'm not a coach, but I am 100% invested in the game and as a stakeholder caring about the game moving forward. And one of the things that I get asked a lot is about networking. You know, Joni, you did a really good job of networking and not ever overstepping your bounds as an assistant or an associate head coach with your head coach, but also making it clear that you did want to be a head coach one day and you had options. You had to just wait to see what was the right option and what was going to fit with your own personal puzzle. When people say networking, like, and you're talking about circle, How can young coaches or coaches that are listening that don't have a diverse circle, that are looking to make a relationship with somebody that maybe could help them grow or understand or develop in other areas? I'm big on networking. I think that's a really important part of what we do. How do you feel about that whole long, drawn out, run on sentence that I just threw at you?
I think it's extremely important. I think the first thing that needs to happen is you have to have an understanding and a conversation with your head coach. I talked to so many assistants, and even when I was an assistant, there were so many other assistants who were afraid to have a conversation with their head coach about wanting to become a head coach, and even having a conversation with administrators at their institution because they didn't want it to appear a certain way. And I said, well, if you've had an open conversation with your head coach, then it shouldn't, because you should be on the same page. And so I think the first thing that has to happen is you have to, a lot of times I felt like as an assistant, just because something is presented to you, it doesn't mean it's the right fit for you, even as an assistant. So be intentional about who you work for, because that has a lot to do with how you're going to be able to navigate your networking opportunities. Once you've established that, when you go to symposiums, when you go to the Final Four, when you're watching a podcast, there's nothing wrong with sending an email or writing a note saying, I really enjoyed listening to you at the Final Four talk on so-and-so. I really enjoyed, you know, you at a Step Up or on Debbie's podcast. You know, this quote really jumped out at me. Thank you so much. I keep every single one of those. I take a picture of it. I put it in a file. I try to respond to all of them, but it carries a lot of weight. I think the other thing in terms of your circle is it's got to look different than you. Like, my mentors are not all Black females, because we, you know, there's some that are Black females, but we often share the same perspective. So again, if all I'm doing is talking to somebody who looks like me, then how am I going to get the full picture, you know, and the accurate information for that matter? So I was also very intentional about building, my board of trustees, as a lot of people call it, very diverse: a Black female, a white female, a Black male, a white male, administrators of different, you know, ethnicities, because it's important to have a full picture. And depending on the situation, I call on different people to get advice. So I think it's important to be intentional about stepping outside of your comfort zone. And then the other thing that I tried to do, and this is actually something Coach Landers encouraged me to do. He said, while you are traveling, when we're on the road, figure out, you know, if there's an SWA at a peer institution that you admire or that you would like to talk to, try to have coffee with them. Try to meet with them on the day of the game or the night before if it's a, you know, weekday game, and just reach out and say you're coming to town. You watch them from afar. That's a great way, because a lot of times, SWAs, Senior Deputy Director of Athletics, are going to end up becoming athletic directors somewhere else. And a lot of those high-level administrators are at your institution now. And so when they move on and go somewhere else, even if they weren't at your institution, if they're in your conference and you've made that connection, then you're going to remember them and they're going to remember you. And so those are just some things that I try to be intentional about doing. And it needed to make sense. Like, you don't want to be overbearing and bother people, but when you can take advantage of an opportunity of a team getting a good win and reaching out and say, hey, your women's team got a great win last night, congratulations, keep it going. That's relevant. It doesn't seem random. Again, when you hear somebody speak at a symposium or on a podcast, on a Zoom, send them an email, send them a note, have something attached to it that you are complimenting them on or asking them about, so it doesn't just seem self-serving.
I'm hoping that the people that are listening to this podcast are going to send you, at least you're going to hear from 10 people at least. I'm going to give it just a small number to start with, but
I'll let you know.
Let me know, because I will be interested in how many people reach out from a networking standpoint. I do think it's really important. Okay. You mentioned Andy Landers. All right. Let's talk about Andy for a second. A lot of people say replacing a legend is really, really challenging. And it did take you a minute to get going. But now look where your program is, a top 25 program, taking South Carolina to the end last night in a game that you played in Columbia. When you're trying to take on an incredible legacy, if you even look at it that way. I mean, do you take small bites, or are you taking a big bite right from the beginning?
You know what? I heard all the time, oh my gosh, it's like when you take over at Texas, at Tennessee, you know, whoever takes over at UConn, Rutgers, Georgia, like that is a tall task. And I'm going to say it this way. It has its challenges because of what Georgia basketball is and the expectation and the gratitude that I have and the responsibility that I feel like everyone in this program has to keep Georgia at that level and enhance what Coach Landers and all of the former players did. It has been extremely easy because of Coach Landers. He and I obviously have a great relationship. That is not a secret. We talk all the time, 2 or 3 times a week. But he wanted it to be a smooth transition for whoever. You know, he was always very clear about this is Georgia basketball. This is not Andy Landers. And so he never wanted the credit. He almost didn't come to the press conference, Debbie, when I got the job, because he did not want anybody to interview him or it become about him. And I had to beg him to come. And I was like, if they do interview you, I don't care. Like, you know, and so he's very cautious and very careful about making sure that no one shifts the spotlight to him or tries to make it about him, because he always had the understanding that this is not my program. This is their program. This is Georgia basketball. This is all the players' program. And because he had that perspective, it has been an incredibly smooth transition for me in terms of not feeling like somebody is looking over my shoulder, having conversations with former players or administrators, and making it more difficult, because the challenges of continuing to do what was already done in this day and age, where there's so much parity now in our sport, are already hard enough. And so it is totally because of him and his foresight and just his humility and how he approached his program when he took over in 1979 that has allowed me to focus on the main thing, which is continuing to recruit, build our brand, you know, and coach these young ladies, and not worry about all the other outside forces and noise that could come when you have a retired coach who still lives in the same town or city that you're coaching in and who is ever present. He has just been really tremendous in that way.
You're going into a Zoom call with a recruit, or you're trying to get somebody to watch your game on TV. What are 2 or 3 things about your team that you absolutely want people to see when they watch your team play?
Our chemistry jumps off the page. Our culture. You can see it in our if you look at our bench, you can see it in the 5 young ladies that are on the floor representing us at that time. It's the first thing I want them to be able to see. The second thing is that we play really, really hard on both ends of the floor. And it's a fun style of basketball. So we're going to defend. We put that out there from the very beginning. And there's a lot of things that come with playing defense in terms of just who you have to be and having a commitment to wanting to do that, because it's important in this league. If you don't defend, and you don't have a shot. And then we talk about having the chance to put your offensive skills on display. You know, if you watch us, you're going to see us be able to put a lot of different styles on the floor. We can run fast. We can play a half court game. We can play a guard game. We can play a forward game. And you need all of those pieces if you want to compete in the Southeastern Conference. And so those are some of the conversations that we have that we want them to pay attention to initially when they're watching us play. And then as they watch us more, we obviously get into more details of this is how we would use you in this action, or this is what we think you could do for our team. And, you know, obviously get into more details, but at the beginning it's about watch how much fun we have, watch how much we love each other, watch how hard we play, because if you don't play hard, you can't come here. And then knowing that we're going to have a lot of different styles that we can put on the floor and play.
We are coming off of We Back Pat Week, and you played against Pat, you've coached against her. And instead of asking you about a particular story about Pat, because I'm sure we could go all day about stories about Pat, but I want to know from your perspective, what was the 1 or 2 things about going against Pat or preparing for Pat as a player or a coach that you absolutely had to be buttoned up on, or else you were going to get blown out?
Always rebounding. Her teams have always, and even now, Tennessee is just always been tremendous rebounding the basketball. And then getting them into a half-court game. They run really well. Their transition's really good. And so it was forcing them into a half-court game. I think the other thing that you have to be buttoned up on is personnel, because there's so many talented players and so much talent when you look at Tennessee rosters that you had to own your individual matchup as best you could. And so in order to do that, you have to know personnel and tendencies, because where are you bringing help from? You know, when I played, it was the three Meeks. I played against Holzclaw for 2 years and guarded Tamika Catchings for 4 years. And Samika Randall was right there too. So who are you going to help off of in that scenario? So you better know your personnel and try to defend as best as possible.
The SEC went through a phase where Pat just completely dominated. You know, there'd be Andy would be, you know, right there. Joe Champy at Auburn would be right there. And now the SEC has Dawn Staley. And Dawn has turned into the sort of the dominant program. Like, no disrespect to anyone else, it's just the way that program has been built. What can you pull away from having just played them, that knowing that this might be a standard in the SEC right now that you have to be able to play with to be able to win, that can help your team moving forward? Because you are a top 25 team. You are a balanced team. You do have very good guard play. And then Jenna Stady at the rim has been fantastic all year.
Right. I think it's just continuing to build. So this year is the first year I felt like we've had the depth that we want to have. If you look at South Carolina, that's the first thing that has jumped off the page for the last 2 or 3 years with them, is that their starting five is tremendous, but then her next five could be starting somewhere else. And so she's got a 10-player rotation that could start anywhere in the country. So there's no let up when she subs. And this is the first year that I feel like we have been close to that. And then just the mentality of, like, we're going to win. Like, there's no doubt in their mind that they're going to win when they step onto the floor. And that's something that you see and you feel when you watch them play, when you're playing against them. They just have a mentality of, we know we're going to win. We know we're supposed to be here. And that's something that we still are working towards. We have gotten much better. Our win at Tennessee was a great win for us, for that fact that we felt like even when we were down 15, we knew we could win that game. And we've just got to continue to learn and get some of that in us and continue to create the depth that she has. And, you know, John Wooden said it best, it's not about the X's and O's, it's about the Jimmys and Joes. And she's got a, not Jimmys and Joes over there, but her young ladies are very, very talented and were pros when they got to her program and just continued to work and get better.
When you look at the overall picture of where our game is right now, I want to ask you a broad picture question, Joni, because I think you'll have great insight on this. There's a theory out there that with the transfer portal that all of a sudden some of these kids might be taking their talents to South Beach. You know what I mean? Like, they already are sort of connected through summer basketball. Unlike when we were growing up, you know, you didn't know the other team. You weren't friends with somebody on the other team. You might have played with them or against them in high school, but, you know, you didn't have the kind of camaraderie that there is in the game today. So when you think about that concept of transfer portal, there's benefits, there's negatives to it. And the way you got to handle your own teams now and balance, you know, the tough love part of it. Do you think that we're headed towards a supermodel like that would be taking our talents to South Beach?
it concerns me for sure, for a lot of reasons. I think it, in some ways, it creates the mentality of they're half in, half out, even when they show up on campus. I mean, we've heard a lot of young ladies, not here at Georgia, but other places, say, you know, when they call us even to say they've chosen another school, well, you know, let's continue to talk. I'm like, well, we can't, we're not going to talk to you. They just have it in their back pocket, or their coaches will say, well, if it didn't work out, she can always transfer. Like, that's already in their head when they step on campus. And so that was never an option for me. It was never an option for you. It was, this is where you chose to go to school. This is where you're going to go.
Would your parents have let you, Joni? I mean, would your parents have said, like, mine were like, you start, you don't quit. You got to figure it out.
I can remember calling home in my dorm room, going down and waiting in line to use the phone and calling my parents to, like, say, oh my gosh, like, not that I wanted to leave, but, like, this is so tough. like I'm not playing right now. And it was suck it up, you know, figure it out, suck it up. We believe that Coach Moody and his staff are the right people for you. You know, you're around the right people, figure it out. And that's what worries me. Not even because it could hurt us as a program or hurt schools. I worry what it does to these young women who are never going to learn to tough anything out and figure it out if they can just bounce from one place to another and then play immediately. At least before it was, well, I'm going to have to sit out a year. And do I want to do that? And then the waiver process created all of this confusion and so much work for the NCAA that it's just, okay, we're going to give everybody now. We're going to take ourselves out of it. We don't want to deal with waivers, so everybody can go and play immediately. And I just think it sets them up for failure down the road. And so that concerns me from that standpoint. However, I do understand at times that there is a you could have gotten yourself into a bad situation. And it is why in the recruiting process, we really stress asking the tough questions and not getting caught up in the name on the front of the jersey or the graphics and the mail outs that you get. Like, get to the meat and potatoes of who you're thinking about going to. And because everybody is so connected now with social media, you can find out. We tell our recruits when they were allowed to go on campus, we would say, don't just talk to the young lady that's hosting you. She was partnered with you for a reason. Talk to number 15 on the bench that doesn't play. Talk to the walk-on. How do they get treated? Your parents should be asking, well, how often do the young ladies come to your house? Is it only for official visits or are they welcome anytime? How often do you go eat with your head coach if relationship is important to you? And so I think it's about being intentional during the recruiting process to try to keep those things from happening and not getting yourself into a situation or being misled and then getting somewhere and realizing it's not what you thought. But we have obviously taken transfers and that has worked out well for us, but we are still very intentional when we do that. It just concerns me for what are we teaching our young people if they can hop around and get out of something before really seeing it through. There's something about seeing things through and coming out on the other side of it that builds you as a person, that builds you as a woman. And that concerns me for our youth.
I want to ask you one more thing, Joni, and then I can't thank you enough for your time. This has been such an enlightening, inspiring, uplifting. I mean, you're better than two cups of coffee in the morning. I can tell you that right now. I want to know your relationship with your mother now that you are a mother and now that you serve in a role in mentoring these young women that you have on your campus. Like, when I first became a mother, my relationship with my mom changed completely because I couldn't believe what I had done, put her through, how it works, whatever, all of it, you know? And now, you know, fortunately, I still have my mom and my dad, and you have your mom and your dad, but specifically your mom. You know, what has she meant to you? How do you transfer what you've learned as a mother? And then how do you use it to help raise your own two daughters with Darius and with your team?
That's a great question. You know, I've had a lot of reflection about this, so I'm really glad you asked. My mom and I have always had a really good relationship. She, you know, from a young age, she knew I was going to be tall. She's 5'11", my dad's 6'3", my brother's 6'4". So she always, you know, put me in ballet so I could stand tall and be graceful, and tall is beautiful. And so I was always very confident. My mom, just to give you backstory, she started out as an AP biology teacher, and then she got into administration. And she finished as deputy superintendent of the school system in Meridian. So doing that, I watched her, you know, obviously she had her master's, you know, when I was born, but then she worked on her PhD. So she was doing all that and she was still traveling twice a week to Mississippi State to work on her PhD and her doctorate. And she missed a lot. You know, my dad was there. He played basketball in college at a junior college before going on to and graduating from Mississippi Valley State. And so, you know, I was a daddy's girl. I was a tomboy. So he was around. He came to all my games, all my track meets. And my mom obviously was there when she could be, but there were some things that she missed. And I don't want to say I had resentment for that. I just felt like she maybe didn't think it was as important. And so now, obviously, being in that same position, I have come back to her and said, like, I get it. You know, it wasn't that you did not want to be there. It wasn't that you didn't see it as value. you were trying to put us in a position to be better. And what I realize now is that everything that I am in terms of how I work and how I approach my career is because I watched my mom do it. You know, my mom, I was born in 79. So in the early 80s, it wasn't very common for the wife to be the breadwinner in the family. And my mom was that. You know, they both started out as teachers. My dad had opportunities to get into administration, but he loved the classroom. So he stayed an AP history teacher. My mom took that opportunity and it flipped the income in our house in terms of her being the breadwinner. And when I look at how that parallels what I'm doing now, I would have never had the courage, foresight, being from Mississippi, even to step out of that box and think that was okay for me to do if it had not been for her example. And so I'm just extremely grateful that she was a pioneer in so many ways, and it gave me the confidence subconsciously to know that I could do the same thing. She always told my brother and I that no dream is too big, and we believed her. And so much of who I am is because of what I watched her do, not even knowing that she was giving me those nuggets at the time.
It's an empowering feeling for you more than it is 100% guilt for what you do with your girls.
Yes.
Joni, that's really inspiring, and I can't wait to meet your mom and dad. The next time we're on the road and we're able to call a game at Georgia, I'm going to be looking for your mom and dad. Hopefully they'll be in town helping you out with your daughters and helping you and Darius. And I can't thank you enough for your time. This was awesome. You're fantastic. You've done such a great job building the program and putting your team back in the top 25 and in the national spotlight. And I can't wait to see what happens as the rest of the season goes on.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate you so much. Thanks for all your texts. I appreciate how you check in and what you do for our sport and the game of women's basketball. Keep using your voice. Thank you so much.